and dragging on the ground behind him. Every couple of steps the boy would tread on them and stumble.
"How is that kid still walking? His guts are on the floor, hanging out like kebab meat."
Nick couldn't take any more. He gear-changed into reverse and shot the car backwards. He kept going until the shadows reclaimed the nightmarish child and the chaos of his street. Once there was nothing left to see, he stamped on the brake and stopped the car. He sat there for a few seconds, hyperventilating. For a brief moment, he almost convinced himself that it was all over, and that he was the one who had been sick all along, hallucinating with fever.
"There's nothing happening here. When I head back to the front of my house, I'll see that I was just imagining it all. Maybe I'm the one with fever."
But he knew that wasn't true. People were dying and he needed to get help. Help for Deanna. Nick shifted back into first gear and rolled the car forwards, picking up speed as quickly as the 2-litre engine would allow. The sooner he found help, the better things would be. Somewhere there would be people dealing with the situation. Somewhere there would be answers and... Nick stamped on the brake again.
"God damn it!"
he shouted, more out of fright than anger. It was Lara. She banged on the windscreen with her palms.
"Let me in, please!"
Nick shook his head. He didn't have time for this, nor did he owe the woman anything after she'd left him alone to fend off her husband. He brought the clutch up, ready to take off.
"Please!" she begged him.
Nick sighed. He flipped the toggle on the dashboard to disengage the locks.
"Get in the back, quickly!"
She nodded gratefully and made for the rear passenger door, but before she managed to open it, someone grabbed her from behind and dragged her back into the shadows. Nick heard her screams, but he could not see what was happening. He waited a few seconds, unsure how to proceed, before finally deciding that Lara was a lost cause and that he should just drive off. But then the woman reappeared out of the shadows and leapt for the car. She yanked open the door and sprawled onto the back seat. She was bleeding badly, but it was impossible to tell from where.
"Go! Go!"
she spluttered at him, pulling the door closed behind her.
Get the fuck out of here!"
"You don't have to tell me twice." Nick gunned the engine and took off as quickly as the car could accelerate. He had to steer erratically to avoid knocking over his various wandering neighbours, including the disemboweled young boy. But he managed to make it to the end of the road without running into any further trouble. There was a war being waged in his neighbourhood, and he was retreating. The screams filled the air behind him. Steering the car onto the main road, leaving the chaotic nightmare behind him, Nick let loose a sigh of relief. It felt good to be on the road and moving fast.
"I'm just dreading having to stop again."
A few moments later, once his breathing was back under control, he turned and checked on his passenger. "Are you okay?" he asked her. Lara nodded, but her skin had lost all colour. Her clothing was soaked with dark blood. She was an absolute mess. Hardly surprising, considering the shock she'd been through and the attack she'd endured.
"She's lucky to be alive."
Nick focused on the road. The sun had now risen fully above the horizon, and the shadows were shrinking away. The world seemed to be coming alive, but it had awoken in a panic. Travelling in the opposite direction on the main road was a police car. It was going full pelt, its sirens blaring, its lights flashing. A fire truck headed along right behind it.
"This is nuts," Nick said. "What in Christ's name is happening? Did I miss a terrorist attack or something?"
"My husband! He just went crazy!"
"It's not just him, Lara. Everyone is acting the same. I don't know why."
He's never tried to hurt me before."
Nick sighed. She wasn't listening.
"Your husband is sick. He wasn't in control of himself."
Other cars entered the main road from multiple side streets, creating a steady stream of increasing traffic. All of the drivers were exceeding the speed limit, some outrageously so. Nick had only been on the road 10 minutes when he witnessed a turquoise Vauxhall Astra hurtle into a ditch at 90 miles an hour. The vehicle crunched up like an accordion. The chances of surviving such an accident seemed pretty unlikely, and Nick wasn't about to try and help someone so reckless. He drove on. One thing had become very clear. What had happened in Nick's neighbourhood was not an isolated incident. People everywhere were fleeing. To where exactly, Nick did not know, but his own destination was clearer.
He had to make it to the hospital, talk to a doctor and find out if Deanna could be helped. At least find out if they understood what was happening. Then, once he finally had some answers, he would start to face up to what he had done, start processing the fact that he had killed his own son. How he would ever come to terms with that, if at all, he did not know. A pile-up ahead caused Nick to slow down. A motorcyclist took it as an opportunity to overtake, but was quickly forced to decelerate as well. The entrance to the dual carriageway was choked by an overturned lorry and a crumpled police car. There was no room for another vehicle to get past, and the road was a bust. But the guy on the motorbike had other ideas. The leather-clad rider obviously thought he could squeeze his chopper through the gaps and keep heading forward. Nick stopped the car and put on the handbrake. He watched the biker trundle along at a snail's pace, kicking the bike along manually and trying to maneuver it through the twisted wreckage. Just when it looked like he might actually get clear onto the highway, a female police officer ran at him from behind the lorry. She tackled him off his bike and dragged him to the ground. Seconds later, the motorcyclist was screaming as more people appeared from the wreckage and started tearing him apart. Nick took a breath and tried to keep his focus, despite the fact that his heart felt as if it was about to beat out of his chest. He backed up the car as much as possible before coming up against the other vehicles queued up behind him. Then he performed a U-turn into the opposite lane and began heading the other way. The dual carriageway was the quickest way to the hospital by far, but he had no choice now but to take the back roads. The main roads and highways were quickly becoming too dangerous, littered with pile-ups and bewildered pedestrians. Not to mention the other people trying to rip them apart. He pulled off the main road onto a country lane that he knew would eventually bring him out near the hospital. The housing estates and shops gave way to woodland and private cottages. These properties seemed undisturbed compared to the chaos of Nick's own neighbourhood. The middle-class families that lived here were likely still sleeping soundly, while everywhere else had spun into madness. The lane became clear up ahead, and Nick stamped on the accelerator to pick up speed. He kept the car close to the verge, not wanting to collide with anybody coming the other way. Overhanging branches whipped against his wing mirrors. Nick took the opportunity to check on Lara. He glanced back. "I'm heading for the hospital, okay? I need to get help for my wife. Your husband will need help too. Not to mention you could probably use a doctor yourself." Lara did not answer him. She just moaned something that could have been an affirmative response. Blood leaked from all over her body and she slumped on the back seat. A van pulled out of a nearby brickyard and Nick had to slow down to avoid crashing into it. Unbelievably, the driver nodded a polite thank you as he passed by. The man would get the shock of his life when he entered the main roads and saw all the chaos and bloodshed. Part of Nick thought about warning the man, but by that time the van had already driven too far in the opposite direction. Up ahead, the country road widened into a crossroad intersection. Nick slowed down again as he spotted a pair of crunched-up saloons. The two vehicles appeared to have smashed into each other head-on at speed, reducing them to shattered wrecks of jagged metal and torn rubber, rather than the luxury automobiles they were designed to be. The two cars were blocking the centre of the road, but there was still room to get around them if care was taken. Nick pulled the engine down into second gear and kept his speed below 20. The last thing he needed was to add his own vehicle to the wreckage and having to walk to the hospital. A shuffling behind him made him look around at the back seat. Lara was lying face down now and having some kind of seizure. Her blood coated everything and the smell of it filled the car. He was pretty sure she was dying. He brought the car to a crawl and swiveled around. "Hey," he shouted back to her. "Hey, Lara, are you okay? I'm going to get you some help, but you need to stay with me until I get there. You need to stay awake a little while longer." Lara managed to lift her head slowly and glance at him. Her seizures stopped. Satisfied that his passenger was still conscious for the time being, Nick turned back to face the road. He got the car moving faster again, picking up speed cautiously as he approached the wreckage ahead. The two smashed-up saloons were close enough now to see that both were unoccupied. Seemingly, the drivers involved had managed to walk away from the accident in better shape than their vehicles, luckily for them. A groan made Nick turn around again. "Everything's going to be all right," he told Lara. "Just hold..." Lara lunged forward, diving through the gap between the front passenger seat and the driver's seat. Nick was taken by surprise, and both of his feet slipped from the pedals as he found himself shoved forward against the steering wheel. Lara climbed onto his back. She clawed at his coat and yanked at the wool of his collar with her teeth. In the close confines of the car, Nick was unable to fight back. He could not turn round and shove Lara off him. The car was still moving forward, but losing speed as the engine idled. Nick was grateful he wasn't wearing a seatbelt, as he would have been held in place, helpless. It also made leaning down and shoving open the driver's side door that much easier. It was his only chance of escape. The road zipped by as Nick leaned down, the rough gravel only inches from his face. Against all instinct, he kicked out with his legs and managed to launch himself out of the car. He hit the road clumsily, cracking his elbow and grazing his face against the unforgiving surface. He tumbled and rolled for what seemed like forever, every split second filled with agony. Eventually, he came to a stop by the side of the road. He lay there, disorientated and staring up at the sky. His vision was muddled, but as he craned his neck, he watched his car carry on without him. It was doing no more than 15 miles an hour now, but it had been fast enough that the fall had hurt him badly. The near-new Alfa Romeo collided with the smashed-up saloons in the middle of the road and seemed to hop slightly upon impact. It came to a sudden stop, letting out one last grumbling whine as the bonnet popped free and exposed the turbocharged engine. Nick blinked his eyes, trying to clear away the dizziness and flecks of gravel.
There goes my no-claims bonus.
Wearily, he rose to his feet. His right cheek felt like it was on fire, and as he prodded his face, he discovered that a patch of skin the size of his palm had been shorn clean off. The wound stung ferociously, and was accompanied by a tingling throb in his elbow. If he hadn't been wearing his thick woolen coat, things might have been even worse. Nick looked around, with no clue what to do next. His car was banged up, but probably still drivable. Most of the damage was to the bodywork. The problem, though, was that he felt so shaken up that he didn't feel safe getting back behind the wheel, at least not just yet. Not to mention my sick neighbour in the back seat who was trying to bite me. He needed to find a place to sit while his nerves calmed down. The hollow feeling in his legs and stomach was most likely the cumulative shock of the morning's events finally catching up with him, mixed with the most current event of being in a car accident. The urge to vomit and the overwhelming desire to faint fought an ongoing tug of war over his existence. If he didn't do something soon, the likelihood of both happening at once would be a good bet. The country road was deserted, surrounded on both sides by fields. There was, however, a small garden centre 50 yards ahead. There was a good chance someone might be there, someone who could sit Nick down and help him make sense of everything. He started to drag his feet forward, the loose gravel of the road crunching with every step he took. To get where he was going, he would have to pass by the three wrecked vehicles in the centre of the road. It was then that he started to worry about Lara. Would she come at him again as he passed by? Is she one of them now? Them? Who are them? Nick was in a constant state of confusion as to whether people needed help or if they were totally beyond it. Every time he tried to assist someone, they ended up attacking him. Even his own wife and child had seemingly wanted him dead. It hurt his head to even think about. Is their condition reversible, temporary, or what? Why was Lara okay at first, but then ended up trying to attack me too? He stepped carefully as he approached his car. He could see that Lara was still inside and still moving about. She was hanging partially out of the driver's side door. The airbags had deployed and were squashing her torso up against the seat. She was scrabbling at the gravel road and reaching out towards Nick with a hungry expression, but seemed unable to free herself completely from the car. Once he got closer, he could see why. Lara's legs were tangled up in the seatbelt. The more she tried to crawl away, the tighter the strap became around her ankles. She wasn't going anywhere. Still, Nick trod carefully, steering clear of her clawed fingernails and bleeding jaws. She looks like an animal. Before he was totally away from the wreckage, Nick stopped and examined his injured neighbour closely. He wasn't sure why he said it, but he asked, "Can you hear me, Lara?" Followed by, "Are you okay?" Both were stupid questions, he knew, but he just couldn't fathom that a woman he was speaking to only half an hour before was now completely out of her mind. But of course Lara gave no response to his questions. She just kept trying to get at him, like a dog pawing for a morsel of meat lost beneath the fridge. Nick shook his head, wishing he could understand what was happening, wishing he could do something. "What is making you want to attack me? It makes no sense. I tried to help you." He decided to leave his concerns behind for the moment. His primary focus was finding somewhere safe to rest up for a while. Lara would have to stay where she was for the time being. The garden centre up ahead seemed deserted, but there were a couple of cars sat on its pebbled car park. Nick wondered if they belonged to the owners or perhaps the cleaners. Either way, when they saw the state of him, they would surely take pity and offer assistance. They could try and phone for help, too. 999 might be back up and running by now. He climbed a nearby embankment and crossed over onto the pebbled parking area. The main entrance was up ahead, a pair of automatic glass doors with pot plants on either side. He was surprised when the doors opened for him. Considering the early hour, 7:15 according to his watch, Nick had assumed the centre would be closed. He wasn't about to complain, though, so he stepped through the doors gratefully and looked around. The first part of the garden centre seemed to consist of indoor planting, incense burners, and wind chimes. Nick almost jumped out of his skin when he brushed past a set of aluminium pipes that immediately began tinkling.
Jesus!
The smell inside the building was one of musky perfumes, mixed with the assorted earthen scents of soil and plants. In contrast to the many heady odours picked up by his nose, his ears detected nothing except the fading clinks of the aluminium wind chime.
"Hello!" he called out. "Hello? Is anybody here?"
Nick considered that someone must be there, as the electric doors had allowed him access. It would be crazy to leave a place like this unlocked and unmanned. Up ahead was an alcove with a banner above that read, "Aquarium." Nick headed inside and looked around. The space was full of wall-to-wall blue-lit fish tanks, all of them containing either exotic or mundane species. Nick had once kept tropical fish himself, and instantly recognised the tiny plecs that inhabited one particular tank. He also knew that they would eventually grow a dozen times larger in the right environment. There were also brightly coloured bettas, fat-bellied mollies, and a playful batch of weather loaches mixed with African dwarf frogs. Then he spotted a girl in the corner, peeking out from a storage closet beside a large tank of discus fish. As soon as he set eyes on her, she fled back into the cupboard, pulling the door closed behind her.
"Hey!" he shouted. "I need help! I've been in an accident!"
The girl said nothing. The door remained closed.
"Please!" he said. "I've been through hell, and I just need some help!"
"Go away!"
"Why?" he asked. "What's wrong?"
"Go away!"
the girl repeated from inside the cupboard.
"Before they hear you!"
Nick raised an eyebrow.
"Before who hears me?"
"The owners! They've gone mad!"
Nick shook his head.
"Not here as well."
"There's no one around," he said. "They've gone. You can come out."
"No! They're out there somewhere, and I'm not coming out! No way!"
Nick contemplated going over to the cupboard and yanking the girl out by force, but decided that would be an unkind thing to do and counterproductive to his situation. No, his only option was to keep speaking and try to reason with her. There was breathing, nearby. Nick sensed a presence behind him. He heard the panting breaths of a stranger right at his back. Before he even had a chance to turn around, someone pummeled him in the spine and sent him reeling forward onto his hands and knees. He twisted around onto his rump and saw a hunched-over old man in an olive-coloured cardigan. The woolen garment was covered by flakes of scalp and grey dandruff. The old man was insane, just like all the others. Nick scampered back to his feet just in time to dodge an attack from the old man. He quickly ran to the corner of the aquarium and tried to find an escape, but there was none. He found himself cornered between an opened top terrarium of musk turtles and a tank of blue lobsters. The old man's eyes went unnaturally wide as they stared at Nick, almost as if they were going to pop out of their sockets and land on his shoes. With nowhere to run, Nick stepped forward to meet the old man's charge, grabbing a fistful of his cardigan and holding on tight. He used the old man's momentum as a weapon and twisted sideways, flinging him headfirst into the tiers of fish tanks. Water flooded out onto the carpet as the glass frontages shattered. The old man's head had impacted a tank full of neon tetras and was now lodged between the jagged edges of the glass. The vicious crags bit and tore at the soft flesh of his wrinkled neck, and his attempts to get free only opened up the wounds wider. Nick staggered away, dizzy from exertion.
I can't take much more of this.
Blood mixed with the remaining water at the bottom of the broken fish tanks and turned the liquid a murky red. The poor neon tetras inside did their best to keep swimming in their suddenly shallow tank. The old man continued twisting and squirming, and the gash in his neck opened up even further. Eventually, it began to spout thick arterial blood. His sandaled feet twitched and kicked for a few moments as he continued trying to get free. Then he went still. Nick sat down on the floor and took some deep breaths. Being on such high alert, so full of adrenaline, was beginning to take its toll on him. The urge to scream at the top of his lungs and yank out his hair was beginning to take over. Nick just wanted it all to stop. It was too much to deal with any longer.
What's happening?
It was the girl in the closet.
What's going on out there?
I think I just met the owner, he said, not knowing whether to laugh or cry. I wouldn't recommend his customer service. Are you going to come out now? I could really use some help.
No.
Stop hiding out in a cupboard like a goddamn child. You need to get a grip. There was more silence, but he was sure the girl was thinking things through in there. Come on, he said. I'm not looking to hurt you. Slowly the cupboard door began to open. From behind it, the girl peered out.
Fine, she said irritably. But the first sign of danger and I'm back in the closet.
Nick nodded wearily. He tried to smile. The girl was still just a teenager, possibly early 20s. She was a dark-featured brunette with lighter streaks in her chocolate-coloured hair. Her big brown eyes were full of trepidation and she viewed Nick with suspicion. The look suggested that maybe her morning hadn't been much better than his had been.
What happened here? He asked her. I'm still waiting for someone to tell me, she said. I got here early because Mr. Curtis wanted to set up a new display for some ornamental scent burners he got on consignment. I let myself in as usual, but the place was deserted, so I went around the back to the cottage. That's where Mr. Curtis and his wife live. And I found the front door wide open. Next thing I know, Mr. Curtis and his wife are running at me like lunatics, screeching like animals. I ran back into the store, but I didn't know what to do, so I ended up in the closet with the two of them outside, waiting to get me. After a while they went away, but I stayed inside anyway. That's when you came along.
She looked at Mr. Curtis, his head still trapped inside the fish tank, his body limp and lifeless.
I don't get it, she said. He was a nice old man. I don't know why he would want to hurt me.
It's not just him, Nick explained. People have been losing their shit all over town. My wife too, and my son. He didn't want to think about James. He turned his mind to more proactive endeavours. We should try to get some help. Do you have a phone here, or internet access? The girl nodded.
Yeah, we have both in the office, but there's a problem.
What? The girl nodded toward Mr. Curtis.
Well, I'm looking at Mr. Curtis, but where's his wife?
As if to punctuate her point, a far-off crash caused them both to turn towards the aquarium's exit. Close by would be my guess, said Nick. The young girl started back towards the cupboard. He went after her.
Hey, you're not going back into hiding. We need to deal with the situation. You deal with it. I'm going to sit down on the vacuum cleaner with the door closed.
Nick grabbed a hold of the girl, a little harder than he meant to. Fortunately, the show of force seemed to steel her nerves. She sighed and shook her head resignedly.
Fine, she said. But can we at least get something to defend ourselves with?
Sounds good to me, said Nick. They found what they needed in the storage closet where the girl had been hiding. Nick removed the head from a broom handle to turn it into a weapon, and the girl found herself a hammer. What's your name, by the way? he asked her.
Eve.
Nice to meet you, Eve. My name's Nick.
What's with your face?
I had a car accident. Hurts like hell. My car is in a worse shape than I am, though. It was brand new, an Alfa Romeo.
Whoop-de-frickin-doo! Can we just get this over with?
They headed out of the aquarium and re-entered the rest of the store.
Past the wind chime display and indoor plants was a greeting card stand. Beyond that was a maze of swinging benches and assorted garden furniture. Past all of it was a bottleneck leading to a totally new area.
What's through that archway? Nick asked.
The cafe and checkouts.
Nick nodded and crept forwards, broom handle raised over his shoulder like a baseball bat. The area ahead was cloaked in shadow, lit only by the weak morning sunshine filtering in through the skylights. Through the archway and to Nick's left was a quaint cafe, more of a cozy tea room, really. To his immediate right was the store's checkout area. He looked back at Eve and raised an eyebrow of concern.
Be careful, he told her. She could be hiding anywhere. These sick people have a habit of blindsiding you.
Eve didn't reply. She hung back and kept her distance. The cash tills up ahead were set into a booth with two long desks about 4 feet off the ground. Behind the booth was the store's exit, leading back out to the parking lot.
Hello? Nick said in a raised voice, deciding it would be better to alert Mrs. Curtis and see her coming than to have her sneak up on them. Mrs. Curtis! Are you here?
What are you doing, dumbass?
Eve hissed.
Trying to flush her out. Better that than she gets the drop on us.
Sure enough, Nick's calls were met by the sounds of someone shuffling behind the tills. A woman sprang up from inside the booth and faced them over the counter. A stringy ribbon of flesh hung from her lower teeth like a strand of rancid dental floss.
That her? Nick asked.
No, said Eve.
Nick frowned at her.
No? Then who the hell is she? I have no fucking idea.
A hungry growl spun them both around. There was an old lady in a blue frilly dress glaring at them from inside the cafe. Her face was pressed up against the glass as she growled at them. Apparently, the cafe had not been so empty after all.
That's her, said Eve. That's Mrs. Curtis.
The old woman threw herself through the partition window of the cafe and rose to her feet on the other side.
It was like something out of the Terminator.
Now the two women flanked Nick and Eve from both sides. The lady inside the till booth leapt the counter and sprinted towards them. At the same time, Mrs. Curtis came at them from behind.
Run! Nick shouted, dropping the broom handle to the floor, realizing it was useless.
Eve hurried after Nick, and the two of them ran back through the garden center's main floor. Nick clattered into a chiminea 100 yards on and almost tumbled to the ground. He only just managed to keep his balance and keep running. As he reached the automatic doors where he had first entered, he realized that they were not going to open. He and Eve were on the wrong side of the sensor.
Damn it, he said, glancing back over his shoulder at the two women clambering through the store after him. This way, Eve shouted, dragging him by one of his coat cuffs. There's a fire exit.
Nick followed Eve into the depths of the store. The two feral women were only a few steps behind them. The only thing keeping them back was their clumsiness. They bashed and stumbled into the various displays like drunks in a marathon. Up ahead, Eve skidded to a halt. Nick almost went right into the back of her.
What the hell are you doing? He said. Keep moving.
Look, she said, pointing. Nick looked to his right towards the aquarium and could not believe what he saw. Mr. Curtis was back on his feet. His neck wound was so deep that his head hung unnaturally to one side. He was slower now, stumbling along like a newborn calf and moaning hungrily. Nick shook his head.
There's no way he could still be alive. I don't think he is, said Eve.
Nick didn't have time to ask what she meant by that, because Mrs. Curtis came crashing through a display of garden shovels, sending them clattering to the ground. Eve got moving. A split second later, so did he. At the far end of the garden center was a heavy glass door with a green fire exit sign flickering above it. Eve threw herself against the push bar and shoved the door open, stumbling out into the car park. Nick leapt through, right after her. They quickly put their backs against the other side of the door to shove it closed. It was slow progress, though, the fire door built to move slowly to prevent causing drafts.
Come on, come on! Close, goddammit!
2 inches before the door was shut, both Mrs. Curtis and the other woman threw themselves against the other side. A struggle ensued, and Nick and Eve fought back against the unexpected strength of their pursuers.
"How are they so strong?" asked Eve. "Mrs. Curtis is almost 80.
"I don't know," Nick said, "but we need to get this door closed right now. Look!"
In the parking lot, a bleeding man stumbled in their direction. His head craned like a bird when he spotted them, and he let out a moan. Nick was grateful the guy wasn't a sprinter like the two women inside, or else they would already be done for.
"He must have been one of the drivers of the crashed saloons. He's covered in broken glass."
Eve began to groan under the stress of pushing the door closed.
"I'm slipping," she cried out. "I can't hold it much longer."
"I can't either," Nick admitted. "We're going to have to make a run for it. After 3. You ready?"
"No."
"Okay," said Nick. 1, 2, 3.
They made a dash across the car park, stone chips flying up behind them as their trainers crunched down on the uneven gravel. They cut a wide arc around the man ambling in front of them and headed for the road. There was a chance that Lara might have got free and was now waiting somewhere up ahead. That would also mean that it was safe to get back inside his car and drive away. But as Nick leapt the embankment, he saw that Lara was still tangled up in the seatbelts and was going nowhere. His car was off limits.
"Shit!" he said. "Where do we go?"
"Anywhere but here," Eve said.
They both tumbled down the embankment and into the road. Eve pointed to one of the intersections that led to a sharp bend in the road.
"Maybe we can lose them round there."
Nick glanced behind him. The two women from the garden centre were stumbling around the car park with the glass-covered man, but so far they seemed unaware of Nick and Eve's location. They were glancing around, moving in circles and sniffing the air, like any other predator hunting prey.
"Okay," said Nick, "let's just get out of here."
They pounded the road towards the bend, their breaths ragged and painful. Just as Nick thought they might be home free, a piercing screech from the parking lot made it clear they had been spotted. Eve's eyes went wide.
"They're coming!"
"I know," said Nick. "Just keep running."
Something caught Nick's attention. He spun around urgently and managed to fling himself to the ground just in time to avoid getting hit by a skidding bus. Eve hit the dirt right beside him. There was a never-ending moment where he closed his eyes and waited for death, expecting to feel the crush of the wheels over his body, but the moment eventually passed, leaving behind nothing but a tense silence. The bus had come to a sliding stop, a protesting squeal echoing from its brakes. Its bulky rear tires rested less than a meter from Nick's outstretched legs. He rolled onto his back and looked up in confusion as the vehicle's pneumatic doors hissed open.
"Get in!" screamed the driver.
Chapter 5. Nick yanked Eve off the ground and bundled her up the steps onto the bus. Then he flung himself in after her, twisting around to make sure that the doors were closing behind him. He sighed with relief when they hissed shut. The bus started moving, and Nick stumbled sideways into the aisle. He had to grab hold of one of the support rails overhead to keep from falling down. Eve dragged herself over to the nearest vacant seat and sat down, clutching her chest as she tried to catch her breath. It was then that he noticed the other people on the bus. He nodded at them all politely, but decided to turn to face his saviour, the bus driver. If he hadn't come along when he did. The driver was a rotund man with thinning hair, grey at the sides. Both of his narrow, unblinking eyes were glued to the road. The steering wheel was gripped tightly between his pudgy hands. "There's a car wreck up ahead," Nick warned him. "You'll have to drive carefully to get around it." The driver nodded and kept the bus at low speed. Up ahead, Mrs. Curtis and the two other infected people from the garden centre were coming up the middle of the road. They looked like a pack of roving hyenas.
"Friends of yours?" asked the driver.
"More like acquaintances," said Nick.
The driver steered around them carefully and then decided to introduce himself.
"I'm Dave, by the way."
Mrs. Curtis leapt at the side of the moving bus, but rebounded futilely to the road in a crumpled heap. The people on board whimpered with fright, but seemed to realize that they were safe.
"Really good to meet you, Dave. I'm Nick, and the girl with me is named Eve. What made you pick us up?"
The bus reached the crossroad intersection and started to manoeuvre around the three wrecked cars, which included Nick's Alfa Romeo. It felt wrong to abandon it.
I bloody loved that motor.
Dave cleared his throat. You looked like you needed a lift, way you was running down the road like a bat out of hell. Seems quite a few people are in need at the moment, but I can only pick up so many. Nick glanced back at the other passengers. All of them wore their own individual expressions of fear and pain. Some were stony-faced and silent, while others wept quietly.
You rescued all these people?
Dave shrugged one shoulder. Some of them I did. I'd already picked up a few on my normal run. Things didn't get crazy till about 30 minutes later. After all hell broke loose, I managed to collect a few people here and there, dropped them off near their homes whenever I could, but most people were beyond saving. People have gone bad in the head, like wild animals. Nick nodded.
I know what you mean. Something is making people insane. I think it's some kind of sickness.
I was pretty much thinking the same. Seen a lot of sick people these last few days on my morning runs. Flu, colds, fevers. People sneezing and coughing from the moment I picked them up to the moment I dropped them off. Something bad has got itself inside people.
Well, said Nick, I'm pretty sure I owe you my life. Thank you.
Dave huffed and put his foot down on the accelerator. We're not out of the woods yet, I'm afraid. I got no clear destination and only half a tank of petrol.
We should go to the hospital. Find help.
Dave took his eyes off the road for a moment and looked Nick in the eyes. There was something approaching regret in his expression, as if he didn't want to say what he was about to.
Hospital was the first place I checked.
Nick raised both eyebrows.
And?
No good. There were sick people everywhere, bleeding and half-naked, making those terrible screeching sounds they make. It was a bloodbath. I turned around and left no more than 5 seconds after getting there. It was a complete death trap. In fact, there's a gal named Pauline I picked up from near the hospital just in time. She had a group of maybe a dozen crazies right on her heels. Lucky I got to her when I did. She's still with us, couple of rows from the front. She'll tell you herself that the hospital is a no-go.
Nick felt defeated. People were sick and even the hospital couldn't help, apparently. How was the situation ever going to get better when there was nowhere to go? No one to take control or offer assistance?
How about a police station? Nick asked.
Dave shook his head. The cop shop is in the town centre and the main roads to town are all blocked up with traffic.
Then where?
Well, Dave began, one of the folks I picked up earlier had the idea of finding an army base or something. They tend to be out in the countryside where things might not be so bad.
Nick nodded.
If anyone can deal with a shitstorm like this, it's the military.
Where is the nearest base?
Well, that's the problem. No one has any idea, and the guy who originally suggested it took off on his own to find his family. So keep an eye out for any road signs that might help us. I'm going to head towards Nottingham, see if we can find the Sherwood Foresters, or at the very least a petrol station that isn't overrun. The Foresters are a pretty big regiment, right?
Nick shrugged. He had no idea. He looked out at the road ahead and was glad to see that it was clear for the time being. There might finally be time to take a breather. Although the chance to sit and think things through in detail, to reflect on the day's terrible events, was not something he was looking forward to.
James. Diana.
Do you mind if I take a seat, Dave? I'm dead on my feet.
Take a load off, my friend. If I need something, I'll let you know.
He went over and took a seat beside Eve. The girl was currently leant up against the window, examining the scenery as it rushed by.
I'm filthy, she said without turning away from the window.
Nick stared at her.
What?
She stretched out her legs to show the mud that covered her jeans from the ankles to the knees.
Look at me. I need a shower. Need to wash my hair. It's disgusting.
Big picture, Eve. People are dead, or at least in much worse shape than you. You can clean yourself up later.
Don't talk to me like that.
Like what?
Like you're my fucking dad or something.
Nick felt himself snarl.
I'm not your fucking dad. My only child died this morning on my goddamn kitchen floor, and all you can do is moan about some dirt under your nails.
Eve folded her arms grumpily and grunted. It was obvious she had no interest in speaking to him unless he was ready to indulge her complaints.
Fair enough. Guess there's no reason for us to be bosom buddies now that our life and death experience is over. She can go back to being a stroppy teenager, and I can go back to being an adult.
Nick rose up from his seat and switched over to the other side of the bus,
taking a seat just in front of a middle-aged woman in the tattered remnants of a grey blouse. A colourful scarf lay on the seat beside her. It was covered in blood that seemed to merge with the floral pattern. He smiled at the woman as he settled into the threadbare cushion in front of her.
"Hey," she said to him wearily, "welcome to the hell bus."
Nick chuckled, but it contained no mirth. It was a mere social instinct. "Well, I for one am glad to be a passenger. Beats being where I was before Dave picked me up." The woman nodded.
"It's not the bus that's hell. It's everything outside the windows."
Nick looked out of those windows and saw nothing but trees and fields. It was a pleasant view, but he could imagine the things the woman had witnessed on the main roads and in the towns. He understood what she was saying.
"Seen some nasty stuff, huh?" he said.
"Me too."
"I was at the hospital," she said, staring out of the window blankly, "to pick up my sister. We live together and her car isn't running. She was working the night shift. She's a nurse."
"Was a nurse.
I was supposed to pick her up this morning."
Nick could see from her faraway gaze that she was remembering something ghastly. It was a fair guess that it involved the fate of her sibling.
"I'm sorry," he said, remembering the sight of James dead on the kitchen floor.
"I've lost people too. I think a lot of people have. It's all very wrong. She was always a bit of a mess, you know, my sister. Never could seem to get her life in order, always sponging off me and wasting her life. I always figured she would find her way eventually once she'd grown up a little more. Now she won't ever get the chance."
Nick nodded. "Dave told me he picked someone up from near the hospital. Is your name Pauline?"
"Yes, Pauline Ross. Wish I could say it's a pleasure, but, well, you know."
Nick nodded and tried to smile. He knew how she was feeling. While he had been running on adrenaline for the past couple hours, too panicked to properly grieve his losses, this woman had been sitting on this bus, alone with her grief. The reality of the situation was crushing her, and Nick knew that once he took the time to slow down and think, his grief would crush him also.
"Just the thought of thinking about it is making me afraid."
He looked around the bus at some of the other passengers, trying not to dwell on things that could wait for later. There was a grimy-looking man in navy blue work overalls at the rear of the bus. He had thick dreadlocks and was staring at the floor while picking at calluses on his hands. In front of him, a couple rows ahead, was a teenaged boy in a bulbous yellow jacket. Like Eve, he was gazing out of the window and watching the world whiz by. Lastly, there were two older ladies, sitting together in the middle rows and nattering to one another as if they were on an ordinary journey on an ordinary day. Acting that way was probably their way of staying calm, the stiff upper lip of the older generation. Nick did not blame them at all.
Better to fake sanity than accept insanity.
The vibrations of the bus's diesel engine started to lull Nick into a restful daze. Now that he was finally safe, his entire body began to throb. His blood felt like crude oil in his veins, pooling at his feet and making them swell. Through the window, he watched the countryside break apart as they passed by a small industrial estate. The various factories and workshops were all dormant, their workers not managing to make it in today.
"Looks like things are going to get a tad rough up ahead," Dave shouted back from the front of the bus. "Everybody hold on to their arses."
Nick got up from his seat and stumbled his way to the front. When he got there, Dave's expression was impassive, staring dead ahead. Nick peered through the windscreen to see what was up ahead. More car wrecks littered the road, and there were pedestrians everywhere. There was a motorway service station just off the upcoming island, and that was currently ablaze. Nick could only assume what had happened there. An outbreak, of whatever was making people crazy, must have occurred at the rest stop, and the weary travellers trying to grab a quick burger or make use of the restrooms would have been taken by surprise. Those who had managed to flee had found their way back onto the roads, which only caused cars to swerve and crash around them, or mow them down completely. The whole scene was a disaster zone as the healthy fought desperately against the sick, and burning husks of automobiles continued to pile up like twisted sculptures.
"Think we can make it through?" Nick asked Dave.
"I don't know. The motorway entrance is totally blocked, but I might be able to stay on the island and get round onto the A road."
"Do your best. If we get stalled, then we won't be able to get moving again. Those crazies will be all over us."
Dave took a deep breath and held it. He stamped down on the accelerator, choosing speed over caution. If any of the people out there on the road managed to get caught up in the bus's wheels, they would grind to a halt and have no escape. Speed was their best option. Dave steered to the right as a body flew out in front of them, arms flailing in the air. Nick could not tell if it was one of the crazies or someone normal pleading to be picked up. They couldn't afford to slow down and find out. A woman clutched her bloody arm against her chest, up ahead. It was missing a hand. She screamed at the bus to help her as it sped by, but there was no way to do anything for her. Nick looked back helplessly as a mob of crazy people engulfed her.
"Holy shit," said Eve, who had silently joined them at the front of the bus. "They're like packs of piranha."
Dave steered the bus through a gap between an overturned people carrier and a golden black Mini Cooper. They scraped against the Mini and exchanged paintwork. Nick figured it was the least of anybody's concerns right now. The bus jolted as the tires crunched over something and swerved slightly. Fortunately, Dave kept a tight grip on the steering wheel and held them straight.
"What was that?" Nick asked. "What did we run over?"
"You don't want to know." They got halfway around the roundabout and the road seemed to clear a little. Mangled bodies littered the verges, but there was no one walking around there. The car wrecks were also at a minimum. "I think we're through the worst of it," said Nick.
"Yeah," Eve agreed beside him. She sounded relieved.
Dave put his foot down in reply and the bus lurched on its axles. While Nick couldn't be sure, he had a feeling that the guy's unflappable manner was actually masking a great deal of fear. Fear that was currently manifesting as a heavy right foot.
"Hey, buddy, slow down a little."
"It's fine, we're clear."
"I know," Nick said, "but we don't know what's around the next bend."
"Hey, this is my bus. I picked you up, remember?"
"I just don't want us to have an accident."
"We won't. I know how to drive."
Something collided with the front of the bus. Dave slammed on the brakes. The bus fishtailed, its tires slipping. The left side of the vehicle rose up off the road, making Nick feel weightless and tossing him to the other side of the aisle. Eve screamed and then landed right on top of him. For a few terrifying seconds, the swaying interior of the bus was silent as the passengers held their breath and waited. Nick was sure that the vehicle was about to tip over onto its side and end up in the ditch. But it didn't happen.
Thank God.
The bus came to a stop with a pained screech of its tires. Nick climbed to his feet and headed back to the front of the aisle. Dave was staring ahead in a trance. He had gone deathly pale.
"Are you okay?" Nick asked.
Dave continued to stare forwards.
"Oh, I'm fine. What did we hit?"
"I don't think it matters," said Nick, pointing. "Look." In front of them was a group of maybe 10 or 12 infected people. They glared at the bus and let out a single collective screech. As a single entity, they rushed forward. The first body to collide with the bus was that of a child. The small girl had blood-soaked pigtails tied with 2 bright orange bows. She leapt onto the windscreen and clawed at the glass. The rest of the mob hit the bus a heartbeat of a second later, from every direction. From inside, it sounded like a hailstorm was underway, but the view from the windows betrayed the true horror of the situation. Bloodshot eyes peered in at them from all sides. Swollen and smashed faces smeared themselves against the glass. Nick felt like a zoo exhibit, except in this case it was the spectators who were dangerous and not the animals in the cage. The bus's interior went dark as all sunlight was blotted out from the windows by the writhing bodies. The weak strip lighting above the aisle flickered as the vehicle rocked to and fro. Nick looked back to see the terrified faces of the other passengers and knew right away that none of them had any ideas what to do. He turned to Dave.
"Can we still move?"
When there was no answer, he shook the driver by the shoulder.
"I said, can we move?"
Dave snapped out of his daze and then blinked his eyes rapidly.
I don't know.
He reached shakily for the ignition key.
"Let me try."
The engine grumbled back to life at the first try. Nick sighed relief. Dave worked the clutch, kicked the accelerator, and the bus lurched forward.
"We're moving," said Dave, "but I can't see a damn thing."
Nick patted his shoulder with encouragement.
"Just keep her moving. Maybe they'll lose their grip."
The little girl was still clinging to the windscreen. She stared in at them with unblinking eyes. Bloody tears leaked down her cheeks, and Nick watched in horror as she began beating her forehead against the glass, like some sort of mental patient in a padded room.
again and again and again. Thud, thud, thud.
The little girl's face broke apart, flesh splitting open with every headbutt against the glass. After a while, she barely even resembled a child any longer. She was just a gore-soaked skull with pigtails. The bus sped up, but the little girl held on. Crack. The windscreen began to give way.
Shit, said Dave. What do we do?
Nick shook his head. I don't know. Just keep moving. If we stop now, we'll never get going again. The little girl continued smashing her skull against the glass, and the cracks in the glass began to spread outwards in thick cobwebs. At the sides of the bus, more infected people began bashing at the other windows, as they too clung on tightly. It was only a matter of time before they all smashed their way inside.
Step on it, said Nick.
But I can't see where I'm going. The little girl struck her skull against the glass again, and the windscreen finally gave way. It fell out in a single cracked sheet and landed in the aisle. The girl came tumbling in after it, but as the bus picked up speed, the other bodies on the side of the bus slipped free. Some fell beneath the wheels, becoming morbid speed bumps. Nick lost his balance as the floor lurched beneath him. The little girl thrashed on the floor at the front of the bus. She was attempting to claw her way up onto her feet.
What do I do? Dave cried. Just keep driving, Nick said, and step on it!
The bus sped up, Dave now able to see through the missing windscreen. Nick braced himself as the little girl rose to her feet and faced him. As soon as she was up, she launched an immediate attack, barreling into him with so much force that it felt like her bones were made of bricks. Staggering backwards, Nick's ankle clipped the bolted-down leg of one of the passenger benches. He went stumbling into the aisle and landed beside the teenager in the padded yellow coat. The lad was startled, but quickly reached down to help Nick back to his feet. As he did so, the young girl pounced, sinking her sharp little teeth into his hand. He cried out in agony and pushed her away. The little girl fell backwards, but immediately came at them again. Nick tried desperately to get back to his feet, but she bundled into him, knocking him sideways onto one of the benches. The teenaged boy got involved again and grabbed the girl around her waist before she could leap on top of Nick. He began wrestling with her from behind, even as blood dripped from his wounded hand.
What should I do?
He cried out in the high-pitched tone of panic. He was struggling to restrain the little girl, despite her diminutive size.
She's going to take another chunk out of me in a minute!
Nick looked around for inspiration and quickly found it.
Pauline! He shouted.
The woman was already staring in his direction, a terrified expression contorting her face. He clicked his fingers at her.
Pauline! Throw me your scarf!
For a split second, she looked at him as if she didn't understand, but then she reached down and picked up the colourful piece of material from the bench beside her and balled it up. She threw it in Nick's direction. It fell a foot short and landed on the grubby floor. Nick huffed and quickly reached to pick it up. Once the scarf was in his hand, he turned to the teenage boy, who was still struggling to restrain the thrashing girl in his arms.
Hold her as still as you can, Nick said as he unfurled the scarf and pulled it out wide.
The teenager nodded, but the beads of sweat on his forehead made it clear he was beginning to tire.
Whatever you're doing, mate, you better do it quick.
Nick thrust the scarf over the girl's mangled face and quickly began wrapping it around her head, trying to cover her bleeding eyes and ruined mouth. After wrapping it as tightly as he could, he then tied a double knot at the back with the frayed ends of the scarf. The little girl stopped thrashing. The teenager stared at Nick with astonishment.
She stopped fighting me.
Nick shrugged. It was bizarre, but it was as if the little girl had shut down. Her attack mode had been switched off. His intention had only been to disorientate her, but it seemed the result was even better. Nick waved a hand in front of the girl's face, trying to tempt a reaction. There was none. After thinking for a few moments, he came up with a suggestion.
Try letting her go.
The teenager balked.
What? No way!
It's okay. I'm ready to grab her again if she tries anything. Go on, just let go of her. Slowly. The teenager didn't seem happy about it, but he obliged anyway. He slowly pulled his arms away from the little girl. She stood there, motionless. Everyone on the bus seemed to let out a collective sigh of relief. Nick took the moment to examine the child.
Her hands hung limply at her sides, fingernails caked in blood. One of those fingers pointed outward at an unnatural angle that suggested a break or dislocation. She was also missing a shoe. Dirt and stones were embedded in her bare foot. Looking at the girl, one thing in particular was clear to Nick. She needed help they could not provide her.
"How are we looking, Dave?" he shouted over to the front of the bus. "I got us back onto the main road, but there are pile-ups everywhere. It's like the whole country started trying to get somewhere in a hurry but forgot how to drive. I can't say how long until we get into difficulty again. Is it safe to stop for a second?"
"Well, safer than it was earlier." Nick looked at the little girl with sadness.
"Okay," he said. "Stop the bus. We're dropping off a passenger."
The bus began slowing down. Nick took a hold of the little girl's arm and began pulling her towards the front of the bus.
"What are you going to do?" Pauline asked him as he passed.
"Taking her outside."
"We can't leave her. She's just a little girl."
Pauline was right, of course, but Nick had the feeling it would be a bad idea to let the little girl stay with them.
"It's not safe," he said. "She's infected, for want of a better word. We can't risk having her near us. We can't just leave her outside on her own, blindfolded. She'll get hit by a car. She's just a little girl."
"A little girl that almost took my bastard thumb off," said the teenager from the rear of the bus.
Pauline could see she was fighting a losing battle, but pleaded anyway.
"Still."
"I'll take off her blindfold," Nick conceded. The teenager shook his head.
"What? No way! She'll come right at you again."
"I'll do it outside. I'll do it quick."
"Your funeral, mate."
Nick took the girl to the front of the bus and then guided her down the steps to the road. She was completely docile, completely willing to go wherever he guided her.
"I'm sorry to do this," Nick whispered to the girl. "Whatever is happening to you, I hope it isn't permanent."
He maneuvered her into the tree line, hoping she would wander off into the countryside rather than onto the motorway. He faced her away from him towards the trees and then glanced back at the bus. The door was hanging wide open for him to run back on board. Hopefully he could do so before the little girl launched another attack. He took a deep breath and began to shove the blindfold up and over the girl's head. A vein in the side of her head seemed to pulse like a drumbeat as the scarf began to fall away. A bead of sweat rolled down the small of Nick's back. Once he'd yanked the blindfold completely clear, he spun on his heel and legged it back to the bus. He performed a running leap up the steps and skidded in the aisle. He told Dave to step on it. Dave didn't argue. The doors closed and Nick watched the young girl turn around and scream at them. But by that time they were already well on their way. The bus picked up speed and the cold autumn air swept in through the broken windscreen. It gave Nick a chill. He leant up against Dave's driver compartment and watched the road go by, eventually losing count of the numerous wrecked cars and fallen bodies that seemed to pop up around every bend.
"We need a new plan," he said to Dave. "Driving around like this is just going to get us killed."
"No argument here. We're running out of petrol too.
So what should we do?"
Nick thought for a second before giving his answer. The plan was simple. Stop at the first safe place that will take us.
Chapter 6. 1 hour passed. The view from the bus's windows only got worse. On the outskirts of Cannock, they witnessed an overturned petrol tanker and a dozen charred bodies. It was unclear what had happened, but it seemed that the tanker's operator decided to try and run right through a police barricade, disregarding a group of people gathered there. The explosion probably killed them all instantly. Then, only minutes later, the bus entered a village called Orawas, only to find every resident there dead. Their limbs and guts lined the concrete paths like Christmas decorations. A group of infected people milled around the middle of the village's roads, eating the remains of the dead. Eve had almost vomited and had been crying ever since. After everything they had all witnessed, the